All right, we will go ahead and get started. This is the last item on the agenda for today, 4824 Edgemore Lane. This is in for sketch plan. The way this will run, we have an hour, and the applicant team will make a presentation followed by discussion for by the panel. And then if there is time at the end, the public will have an opportunity to make comments. I will remind everybody, I think I said this is recorded, and the purpose of the panel is to raise design concerns. And so please keep comments to that, it is most helpful. I think that's all of the housekeeping. Because it's a sketch plan, we will just sort of have a straw vote today, because sketch plan doesn't look at points, just the category. So I think with that, I will turn it over to the team.
Thank you. I'll make a couple of comments. I'll turn it over to the architect. As everyone in the room knows, this is an extremely small site, 8,000 square feet. And with that comes a host of challenges. We were here 2 months ago, and I think the big picture recommendations, and the architects will go into it in more detail, were one, the design's a little bit too ambitious, and two, spread the wealth around all four facades. So we took that to heart, and the architects will walk you through the changes. We also did do a diagram showing what very strict compliance with the design guidelines would do, and effectively what we're doing is render the recommendation to see our building on the site useless because the yield is so minimal. So with that.
Yeah, I think there were at least seven additional sheets that were added from the original submission. Three of those were 3D renderings of different exposures that we didn't have initially, so you'll see them of the more developed design as Robert goes through.
So I'll just run over the main points that were discussed last time. The first of which being that due to the nature of the site and that we need to, or that we're not complying with the design guidelines, we needed to provide a higher quality architecture that was a four-sided building rather than a two-sided building that fronted Edgemore and Woodmont. Additionally, there was discussion about the complexity of the two primary facades and this idea of a zipper and a harsh corner that made the building appear to be more of a landmark despite the small scale of the project relative to what else is going on at Bethesda. And there was some concern about the green wall, the viability of that as well, which we'll get into further. So we can start to run through everything again. Here's an initial rendering, just reorienting us. We are right at the corner of Edgemore and Woodmont, about 600 feet from the metro. And just running through the site, Woodmont is a one-way road going from north to south, so the primary vehicular view of the site will be from that direction, as well as from people walking from the metro. And here is the site currently with the single-family house that's being used as an office right now. That's another site plan. So Woodmont is one way, heading south and Edgemore is four lanes, but it's two-way traffic, so there will be visibility of the project from the west. Passing, comparing some of the other heights of the development surrounding us, we are at 120 feet. The Chase to the south is at 120 feet, and then across Woodmont we start to get higher. Well, across Edgemore as well, we start to get into the 150, 170 foot range of building heights.
Can I ask a minor question? That island that's on Woodmont Avenue, does that exist currently?
Not currently, but it's part of the.
I don't recall it. That's why.
Or yeah, for the bike lanes.
It's something that's planned.
Yes. Yeah, we didn't plan that thing.
Sure.
So what is maybe whoever? Is you want to say something about what DOT says about that or about that island and so
about the island? Yeah, so as you mentioned, DOT has plans right now to construct a separated bikeway on Woodmont Avenue.
Cool.
It's two-way on the west side, and so this plan is just reflecting the DOT plans
And it's going to be two ways?
Two way on the west side, right.
Two-way.
That's not something
bike.
You guys
two-way
bikes.
Two-way bikes.
Two-way
bikes.
That's
two-way bikes.
Not in our plan.
Yeah.
That's part of
the so is it, what, a 10-foot wide?
Hopefully.
Approximately.
I don't
it'd be at least
exactly
10-foot.
Yeah.
What are you going to ask? Do-si-do.
Moving forward into the architecture of the project, we've reduced the parking count from 77 automated parking spaces down to 62. But otherwise, we're still pursuing automated parking, approximately 62 spaces, but the automated parking system is still in place.
What's the reason for the reduction? Just from design changes?
A couple of design changes, and also to get the correct benefit points. Actually, it's a by lowering our parking, we actually increase our benefit points.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you guys looked at, like, you're 200 feet away from a metro
right
escalator. Have you looked at zero parking?
Well, we're trying to get down there. And obviously, there are people in the room who want us to put in 100 parking units. You know, our initial plan was 77 parking units. We're trying to work with what can be done. And beyond being across the street from a metro, we're also across the street from a Montgomery County parking garage.
Exactly.
But having said that, because it's a condo product and not a
rental
product, the market is currently still requiring
and
parking spaces.
And that parking garage does not allow monthly parking at that parking garage. Some do,
okay,
some don't. As of now, that one doesn't. So we're trying to have those conversations in order to reduce parking. But as it is, we're still under the one-to-one parking as of now.
So the ground floor of the project hasn't changed substantially. We are still providing relief at the lobby area, 4 feet for some planting, as well as to give a little bit more back to the public realm. It'll be highly glazed to activate the public realm a little bit more. The units also have not changed, seeing as the exterior of the building changed, but the interior layout did not, aside from how the units interface with the exterior of the building.
So you can see that on the footprint, we, you know, we have a tangent condition along Woodmont, and then we've arced the building as suggested by the group, pursuant to what you saw on the rooftop, which made a lot of sense. And so we're taking out this faceting, which led us to that initial scheme, and but we're making a nice radius curve. And trying to keep, because of the setback requirements, well, the projection requirements only allowing balconies, we really do have a very taut facade to work with on the primary street, two streets, and you know, all the way around the building, I guess, for that matter.
Yeah. Yeah, we did hear the suggestion of more of a flat iron type building, which would be a continuous facade that wraps around rather than this fragmented facade with a celebrated corner. So that's what we did. And up in here was rooftop. So we also heard making the amenity space a little bit closer to the actual curve of the building so that it would appear to just be kind of inset from that curve. So we've done that and expanded.
Still
it
has a little
bit.
Work.
Yeah.
We'll get the right curve. So Carl asked whether it was an ellipse
or a trapezoid
or an oval.
Yeah. Oval, right? Big difference.
Yeah, it's a little.
It's an oval ellipse.
Exactly.
It's round. They got pregnant.
Modified.
So, and then we'll have mechanical equipment on top of the amenity penthouse, which will be well, the amenity penthouse will be primarily focused on the north side. And the roof deck, so as not to invade on the privacy of the Chase. This has not been delineated yet, but our focus is more of a northern exposure rather than a southern exposure. So moving into the elevations, I'll quickly run through these because we can talk more at the perspective since we have a perspective from each corner of the building. We heard concerns about stucco or EPIS as the material for the building, and so now we're looking at essentially an all-brick building with limited use of metal panel detailing and a metal panel grid system. We'll have standard coursing as well as soldier courses for the banding throughout.
We did not attempt to delineate brick patterning and coursing and that sort of thing at this level, at this scale, but we will do a craft building, especially at the three-story level, as requested by the guidelines.
Precedents we looked at, simple but well-detailed brick buildings with essentially organizing grids and double-height facades that could add some order to the project and create a little bit of simplicity.
So all these projects are really beautiful precedents, but which ones are brick, actually?
Well, this is...
That's terracotta,
yeah, terracotta,
right? Yeah,
there's
right.
kind of a masonry
yeah.
reading to it. This one's
yeah.
brick, this one's brick, and... This one has at least a masonry base.
The lines are blurring, though, between brick and terracotta, I mean, as you know. I mean, it's of a material of the earth, and the sizing is now quite extravagant. We have lots to choose from in that regard. So bricks get larger, more like a terracotta panel in many ways.
Yeah. So now we can start to get into the perspective. So we've taken a perspective from each corner of the site because it allows us to make sure that the architecture wraps around continuously rather than having a two-sided building, which was a concern previously. So now we have this facade of white and gray brick that acts as a wrapper between a southern grounding of the base here that relates to the smaller scale down edge more, and then we've created a continuous datum or a continuous base at the 25-foot level that wraps all the way around the building and connects to this sort of tower element on the southwestern facade that relates a little bit more to what's happening in downtown Bethesda and the taller buildings. And then we've added the grid to tie those pieces together and act as a almost sandwich to the massing elements, as well as to modulate the building and create a little bit of a cellular reading due to the residential aspect of the project. And this would be, this doesn't show up very well, but it would be white brick and then a lighter gray brick banding with larger courses at the every other floor. This double height reading will reduce the scale of the building. And then turning the corner, so this would be the western facade, which would be visible from, well, from the neighborhood to the west. Because this is, this land is currently owned by the Chase with no plans to develop. It will be exposed, so currently we need to elevate the architecture to this level, or to a higher level, so that it was continuous all around the project. So we have this frame on this side that also acts to sandwich all the massing pieces together.
And you see where that develops into the three-dimensional piece. The frame, mm-hmm. the frame extends in that setback. And that third brick that wraps around from the Woodmont side terminates in the corner, so the building has an end, which you'll see in others.
Yeah.
We also didn't put we put windows where they were necessary by the use of the spaces within. So living areas and bedroom areas were the primary location for the windows for the second, what is those south and west facades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here we can see more of the southern tower that acts as this grounding element and relates more to the higher urban scale of downtown Bethesda in this direction. And the facade here we've articulated with a little bit of broader shoulders and a grid system that's set within it. So it could be different textured brick, but it's proportioned, and there's a variety of scales from a large scale down to the singular window scale.
So the beige is brick also?
Yes.
The white is brick and the beige mm-hmm. is brick.
Yeah, and then mention the Edgemore building as the contrasting.
Edgemore.
Yeah, and then this is what's being proposed right across the street, the Edgemore too.
It's under construction now, right?
Mm-hmm. Under construction. So we wanted a nice contrast to that. There's some, you know, there are some vertical elements there, but it's mostly horizontal composition, and we wanted to sort of maintain more vertical composition as a counter to that. So it gives that diversity I mean, the Chase, you know, we can talk about the Chase, but, you know, that's an established building for many years, and it's done a certain way. So there's no mincing styles and designs. They stand on their own, but they coexist.
What's the existing grading condition there? I saw it's ramping down.
Yes, so the grade drops about 3 to 4 feet from the northwest to the southeast.
And then it go down, like, perspective?
Down here?
No, when the...
Yeah, it goes down, it goes north.
No, how do I describe it?
Oh, yeah, I see.
It's going down, right? Is that the grade change? I want to understand it.
For the Chase.
It's the grade from the...
The Chase.
From the west to the east.
The Chase drops.
Yes, how much it drops? What's the grading condition there?
I know it goes about 6 feet from the top, from this corner, which is the southeast corner, to the northwest corner, drops about 6 feet.
Okay.
But your question is how much does it drop from west to east, and I'm not quite sure that number.
I guess my question leading to that is what's the base treatment of that when it keeps dropping? Is it continuous, the gray, the brown color?
Yes, it continues.
Okay.
What's the material of the grid, the brass?
The grid here would be metal.
Metal pound?
Yes. But otherwise, the building and basically everything you see would be brick.
Yeah.
And then from the southwest corner, again, you can start to see a little bit of depth here. The grid extends and ties these two massing elements together. So we can get into the design guidelines and compliance here. So on Woodmont Avenue, we're working with a downtown mixed street, which requires a base of 35 to 70 feet, as well as particular sidewalk zones, and a build to order that's 15 to 20 feet from the street curb. So we've established a base, the continuous base that wraps around the building is at 25 feet. But we put our lowest horizontal for this grid system right at 35 feet, which is the minimum required here. And we've also exposed the ground floor here, as well as the second floor, with a lot of glazing so that we can activate the street and pull back the facade and put planting strips in as well to provide a little bit of relief to the public though. And then at Edgemoor, which is a neighborhood local street, we're required a build to line that's at least 12 to 15 feet from the street curb, and a base that's 25 to 50 feet. So we have this grounding element here, as well as the continuous base that wraps around at 25 feet. And again, glazing active in the public realm. So our build to lines are 15 and 17 feet away from the curb. For the street activation of the base, there were suggestions of balconies, signage, a transparent ground floor, as well as planting, which all of which we have implemented at the base of the building. And then in terms of the variation and articulation of the base, as I mentioned, we have a shorter grounding element here on Edgemoor to connect to the neighborhood local street. And the top of that creates this 25-foot base that runs around the entire building, is continuous. And then from that, we have a tower element to relate to the higher-rise urban core, and a 35-foot horizontal along Woodmont. There's also a variety of different plane changes where the base and second floor are inset. We've established a couple of different breaks vertically in the facades, which we also have a diagram of. So the tower separation distance is one issue which was brought up, which I will get into when we talk about the building step backs. But traditionally, we would be required to do a 45 to 60 foot separation between two towers, which would require a 22 and a half foot setback from the property line. An alternate treatment that's suggested is the building below 120 feet, which our building would be, may reduce the tower separation and consider party walls, which is what we're doing. windows that are on these party walls being fire rated and non-operable.
What's the what's the separation to the south?
Currently, it's approximately 29 feet because of the ins and outs of the Chase building. So, looking at the tower step back, if we were to actually set back everything that's required or that's suggested through the design guidelines, it would be 15 feet on Edgemore, 10 feet on Woodmont, and then 22 and a half feet to both the south and the west. This would reduce the typical floor plate from approximately 7,400 square feet down to 2,600 square feet, which is incredibly small and basically enough for one unit, no elevators, two stairs. And here are some massing images of what would happen if we complied with all of that. So we would have to do 35 to 70 feet on Woodmont, and that works out to be 62 feet of actual buildable square footage, or in terms of the number of floors. So we have to lose a little bit there, and then 42 feet on Edgemore, and then the setbacks from the typical floor plate above reduce the edge of basically the typical floor to 21 feet, rather than what we're proposing. So what's being suggested here is that there are methods that can be done to relate to existing buildings and to break down the reading of the building rather than actually providing all of these step backs. So looking at these methods to reduce bulk, what we've done here is we've modulated and articulated the facades as well as limited apparent faces where possible. So by doing double height readings throughout the building, as well as adding this grid that modulates and creates a cellular nature, it's also double height. This helps to add depth to the building, for one, as well as break down the reading of it through the scale of it. We also have vertical plane changes to limit the apparent face. So we have an edge condition here, here, and then over here as well, where the grid ends and where the tower element begins, where it meets the white grabbing facade. And
green wall. Do you want to address the green wall?
Yes, so based on concern from our meeting with the Chase, as well as concern that was expressed from the advisory panel, they've elected to remove the green wall from the facade.
I would just conclude with there are a handful of other similarly small sites in Bethesda. I think several of them have gone through this committee. And we did take direction to actually look at those. The closest one was the one right across the street, and trying to take guidance in terms of the design that we should use as precedent.
How many points are you asking?
Sketch plan.
Yeah, that's right.
I think there's been a much appreciated improvement to the elevations from what we saw before. You know, it is a very difficult and small site. One of the things I'm wondering, you know, I mean, if you look at all the comments that we've been receiving, I mean, it's clear that the biggest issue, without a doubt, is the separation of your building to the south, the Chase. And I think, you know, I can understand why. I mean, ideally, this building should be in addition to the Chase building. I mean, you know, it really should. But it isn't. And so one of the things I'm wondering is, I was just looking at the plans, you know, unit 05 and 06, which are essentially the two southern units, on every floor. What if, I mean, I understand that you're trying to do an alternate to building separation, and I also understand that we would not expect, I think, in the guidelines, that every single tower, particularly on a corner, you know, be separate. I mean, it could be a party wall on one side and a separation on the other side, for instance. You know, it doesn't have to be on both sides every single time. And I think that, I think people could understand the rationale behind that. But what if you, you know, took out unit 5 and 6, or at least set unit 5 and 6 significantly back on, you know, the upper 3 or 4 or 5 floors, so that you had some articulation to the south that kind of allows more, you know, light and air into it, breaks up the massing of that, just that big 120-foot wall, and begins to suggest that you do have tower separation above sort of a podium. You know, if it's at the 70-foot level, okay, maybe it's a little bit higher than that, but at least it's an attempt to sort of create the podium and separate those buildings. You know, could that be sort of a modification that would dissipate the argument, you know, that has been heard loud and clear?
How big are those two units that Paul is referring to? Are those two-bedroom units?
That is, one's a one-bedroom den. What's the other one?
Technically, they're both
They're both one-bedroom dens. They're both under 1,000 square feet. They're both 800 or less. I mean, so they're small units.
None
of the units are large.
Right, they're all small.
They're very small.
This is a modest.
So maybe, you know, maybe a couple of units get a little bit larger and you lose numbers, but
the only other issue, just
we move the whole building
on your design.
No, what I'm suggesting is that, you know, what if the edge of the building came down, and so you had a terrace essentially at that sort of mid height, so that you have a setback, so that it actually doesn't look like it's a 120-foot tower immediately to these units, but it actually looks like more like a 70, 80 foot whatever tower.
So how about we articulate it that way, well, rather than being,
well, actually, if you
focused on numbers,
what,
you know,
what if you pick up on what Paul's saying, and
yeah.
to me Paul, the kind of the white and gray articulation seems a little arbitrary. If you marry what Paul's suggesting with that articulation, it may make that articulation more meaningful.
Paul, my only one of my concerns is this is going to be a steel structure, not a concrete structure. So by articulating that facade is going to do things on the inside to the structure, on the steel structure. So you were right, if you were under concrete, that'd be one thing, but in a steel structure, that's going to pose a lot of other challenges.
Why? I'm curious, why the steel structure?
Because what?
Why the steel structure, not the concrete?
For various, I mean, this is going to be a steel structure for various cost issues and other also features we're going to be put inside the building.
Okay. I mean,
possibly light gauge steel.
BTEC
building.
So right.
Light gauge metal.
Okay. Stop.
Bearing walls.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
So, by making it steel, that makes it harder to set back anything. It's going to affect the structure.
Stacking is important from a structural standpoint.
That's the reason why all the units were the same, yeah, going all the way up this facade.
That's why I'm asking, could we do it architecturally? I mean, we talk about, you know, if you say your idea is to make a break at the top floors, we can do it thinner with a change of material. You know, pick one, right? Change plane, keep the same material, or don't change plane and change the material, and we could have a lower reading from a massing standpoint. And then that might wrap, and I guess as Rod's saying, it might influence what we're doing here.
So do you have bearing walls inside the building?
Metal.
We have core walls of concrete.
Mm-hmm. You couldn't line that setback that Paul's suggesting with a bearing wall? At a bearing wall?
Oh, I mean, we'd have to look into it.
Mm-hmm. But it would change a lot of all
generally
the
it's hard
design
to do setbacks.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing we're debating, and I think we had said this originally, but let me step back and concur. I think you've improved the massing. I think you should have had shots of before and after, and I think you would have seen, you know, significant improvements in the general massing of it. But on the other hand, you know, it's a 100% blowout of the design guidelines, and you have to give something back, and what you have to give back, I think, is design excellence. And you're getting there, but you're not quite, you're not there yet. You're not there yet. Ultimately, and I realize this is a sketch plan, not a site plan, that a lot of this is, a lot of the this is going to depend upon the refinement of the materials in the building. And right now, yes, I understand in words it's a masonry building, but it doesn't convey that in imagery. And I don't know that we could really ask for that right now, but it's going to really demand a highly crafted masonry building.
I think the building design is much simplified. Mm-hmm. It lacks character. You know, I don't know if it's because last round's comment is you try to do too much to make a statement. This is a landmark building. Now you scale it back. Mm-hmm. It's a clean building now, but it lacks articulation is not there yet. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about it.
Well, we could show you images of our projects that would convince you of our intention in terms of what we do as architects. If that were to make a difference, or we can.
Yeah, I think one of the.
We could pull them up on the screen right here. I can.
I'm familiar with.
I could run through them.
Yeah, I understand.
And you know, at this scale, as we said, we, you know, where our intention is good, that we will have a building that's nicely articulated based on craft and proportion, what have you.
Can you go to the corner image the that one? I'm kind of concerned about the white brick piers coming down onto a big glass opening. So there's two white piers that are disconnected with being grounded. And so they have to be picked up somehow.
We had that debate.
I know, and it's like, I'm not convinced. To the right, I think there's a resolution, and to the left, there's a resolution. Those two white piers.
Which is your main entrance, I guess.
Which is your main entrance, et cetera. I just think if you're thinking about the Flatiron building,
well,
the answer is no. They would never have ever have done this. I mean, it was a steel building, you know, with clad. And so
in that era.
In that area, which is pretty impressive because it looks like a barren wall building, but it's not.
Yeah.
The point is that I can't translate steel behind that holding up what is holding up the white brick, you know, and the resolution of that and how it kind of is resolved.
Mm-hmm.
So I would look for more continuity. Mm-hmm. And if there's sort of a white level and then there's that beige level and then there's the metal panel and grid, I think you've got three levels that you can play with, and I think I would like to get a little bit more out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What we talked about is just keeping thin, though, because
yeah.
we do want to open up that corner.
No, I understand.
And so
well, you
that's
may bridge, you know, you may do an arch or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Not around.
Don't do an arch.
Not around. I'm talking about a transfer
no.
type.
But yeah, we absolutely hear you.
There,
yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then let's not get stuck on white. White. I mean, this light colored brick is it going to be white? White? No, it's probably it's beigey brick. What we have available, but in the light, in the sunlight, it will shine white.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Given the sort of size of the site, I wonder if the I think Rod sort of indicated this before. I feel like the sort of the gray brick grid doesn't, it feels like maybe one move too many, certainly on the back.
Yeah,
it just feels like, I'm wondering if given the, you know, maybe the curve is the move of the building and that you have this nice sort of, you know, the use of the windows and the balconies and the sort of, you know, alternating floor treatment. if you just carry that around, does that simplify the whole thing and then give you the opportunity to maybe take that curve and address Paul's issue by repeating it on the opposite side so that your building sort of is, I'm not sure what the word for the geometric shape is, with, but like, you know, sort of, you know, I don't know, lozenge shaped or whatever, but that it gives you a way to marry the front and the back and address the tower step back issue in a different way. I just, this, the grid just feels like it doesn't, I mean, you took off a lot of stuff, and I appreciate that a lot, and I really like the way that, I like the curve so much with the balconies and windows that I'd be very happy seeing it just taken all the way back and make that massing move and then sort of call it a day and then focus on your craft.
Well, you could thicken up the facade to be that frame. The facades could widen so it's not a subset of the distance between the windows, right? We like the flat facade in that part of the building because that's normal to the property line. So that there's a rationale, there's a reason for a flat facade, however it's done. And it could be more of a facade rather than a frame.
Now, Hilsa, were you talking about doing that on the west and the south side?
So, and I feel like it, so, you know, you're highlighting the corner. Is this entrance? Highlighting this is, you know, I can't remember, is there retail on the ground floor?
No.
So, you know, this is highlighting sort of just some amenity space in your garage. Mm-hmm. And maybe that doesn't, like, that's not important enough. And that this is really what it's about. And I understand that you're looking at alternative treatments because you're not stepping the building back. But this doesn't feel, and this to me is more special, especially with, I mean, you're not often going to see that, but I feel like the curve is the better.
You're suggesting taking the framing off altogether, right?
I'm not sure what it gets you. I think it's highlighting the wrong thing. Because it doesn't go all the way around.
So
it's like,
I'm with him. So if you took that white facade back to what Paul was suggesting, the step back, then that is for the rationale as to why you did the change in material.
So is this Coco Chanel where the metal grid was one accessory too many?
Yes.
I don't agree.
Well, okay. But the point is, there is a question of whether the metal is just one accoutrement too much.
I mean, I think, you know, I'm not sure if everybody said it this way, but your first submission was trying to be very heroic and relatively unsuccessfully. There's too much happening. And I like the fact that the simplicity that you put on it, emphasizing the curb already the way it is, but I do like, personally, the extra delineation along the Woodmont Avenue facade of the grid. I mean, I think that's I don't know what I like about it, but I think it's a nice counterpoint to the smoothness of the curve on Edgemoor. So, I mean, ultimately it's up to your choice, but I think the grids, at least on the west side and the east side, are working well for me.
Now, is there a difference on the west side, we're looking at a brick grid versus on the east side, we're looking at a metal grid. Does that make a difference?
Well, that makes a difference.
That sure does.
Makes a big difference.
Positive or negative?
Negative.
Which is negative? Metal's a negative, or
the fact that if they could both be the same thing,
They should be the same. Okay. Yeah.
That's my.
And opinion. If you lowered the grid, the dark grid down, then you could pick up what Rod was saying in terms of the setback, in terms of the material change.
Yeah, you could lower it one.
Yeah,
one double height scale. I mean, I still think there's something I like about that, emphasizing the Woodmont Avenue facade.
Yeah,
I find it very pleasant.
Well, and that breaks down the scale, which is, I think,
I think it's
the comment everybody's been talking about.
Yeah.
At least from the public.
I mean, it's another layer, which I think is relatively important.
Well, I really appreciated the diagram, the massing diagram that you guys provided that showed if you were to meet the strict conformance of the design guidelines, it just shows that that's obviously not a viable building. So I think just taking a step back, personally, I am supportive of a project here. I mean, you're right across from the metro. It's a great location for additional density to kind of draw off the investment in downtown Bethesda. You know, I think if I was in your shoes, I would be asking to, you know, Paul's original comments about the step back to make sure you understand if there's going to be more of a cutout into your density, just because that's, I think that's the feedback that you need at this point.
Is there a way to achieve that objective short of losing that density or not? I mean, what Paul suggested seems to lose a significant amount of that density, and if it's a lot higher, that's a more valuable density, as we all know.
In my issue, obviously, that means I can't do a like H steel structure, which is going to change the scheduling issues, going to change the costing issues, it's going to change a lot. So, you know.
Can you go back to the plan?
I mean, could we see that again as a break and something more restrained, as in massing, and then that can inform, you know, it could develop out of the facade.
And maybe we could change some of the window
issues. Because taking that square footage away and having a big setback is going to kill
us.
One
thing also we could do maybe is on those 6 and 5 and 6 units, maybe change some of the window issues. Because basically the windows are used twofold. One is try to put windows in the dens because people want to not have a, you know, dark den. But also some of those windows were living room windows, but since those living rooms already have windows on Edgemoor or to the west, Widmont or to the west, maybe we can do something with some of those side windows, for lack of a better term.
So what I was going to suggest is to avoid the step back issues is you repeat this here. And so you're realigning. You can still stack them, but...
Repeat what?
Curve. Because then
a curve?
What are you doing?
For the, so that you are... Depending on how you do it, you are increasing the separation from the building. It's in the back corner, so you wouldn't necessarily see it. But I don't think an architectural, I don't think a facade solution is going to work here in terms of setback. I think that's kind of.
Are you saying putting the, maybe I misunderstood also, are you saying put the balconies on the south side rather than the west side?
I'm just trying to think of a way to increase the physical setback between the upper floors of your building and the existing building to the south. And so by making that corner a curve, I mean, it's long and it's kind of in the back, so it may not work, but I think you need to explore things other than, you know, banding on the facade. And if stacking's not going to work, then I think you need to figure that out. I think that's going to be an issue. This is just sketch plan. We can identify it as an issue, but I think it's significant.
Respectfully, I don't think that's the place to make a move. And what you described, because it's the back corner, and the Chase is the leading edge here, so that's not going to really help you.
Right. I mean, it's
this leading edge is a 120-foot wall, as ours is, and we had that setback. I mean, to help us rectify the unit, we initially had that setback on the south.
Yeah, we at one time we looked at putting the facing. We were going to flip this building, where 6 and 7 were basically, they were facing on the south side, so they were going to be facing the Chase, so you would have a setback there, and the comment at the time from the Chase was, we didn't want people looking into us. And the 6 and the, and wow. If you kind of cantilever the building, right now the 6 and 7 units are looking at the west.
Yeah.
So I was going to do a setback there, but they said, hey, we would rather have, you know, people in dens
along the left.
We'd rather look at this. So we look at that issue, right. And we're looking at that setback issue just for that purpose.
So what's the tower setback now?
29 feet.
And it wants to be, and so to your property line.
It's right on the property line. Right?
Is that right on your property line? So it's 29 to your property line?
Yeah, we're on the property line. The public rooms are on the balcony and on the west side.
West and east, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was well supported by the Chase folks. Not to have the not just visibility, but there's activity.
They're better
that they
units
probably
because
didn't
of that.
Want.
They're better units because of that, though, aren't they?
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, they look out over the amenity space.
I think so.
But that was our initial design, so we would have at least in that area we were giving them, you know.
Well, something else happened, Sean, is when we worked out the core of this building, that elongation made for better units that were lateral. It all fell into place. It was that...
You know, the time we were talking
Eureka
about,
moment where we said, this is what we need.
And previous to that, we were also talking about the green wall. So that was kind of, we went down that route. So because of the green wall wanted to be as part of the separation.
On the blank wall.
Yeah.
Because we didn't want windows and green wall together.
Recognizing the growth of a city, if you go to a more established city, go downtown, you see buildings that are closer than 29 feet to their sides. And I think, to some extent, the tower separation contemplated a situation like a car building where you have a large property and you have several towers on one large property. That's not what's happening here. And, you know, for instance, just across the street where they have two ownership lots, the building is being built right on the face of the line up against the existing building. So, I mean, I can personally say that if I were in the Chase, I wouldn't be happy about it. None of us would. But on the other hand, it's 400 feet from the metro. It's an urbanized condition. What's the difference here versus the other buildings that have been approved based online? And the Pearl Street building was another instance where that was office, that was proposed commercial, proposed residential against commercial. So a little different, I get that. But I'm just saying it's sort of like the reality of urban living.
Well, we reviewed a project on Wisconsin that was a mid-block project with a party wall. And there was a lot of discussion about tower separation on that one, particularly because the units directly to one side actually had balconies around the corners. And so how do you, you know, if you put a party wall, you know, part of that balcony is going to be facing right on a wall. So there was some articulation that was provided, and there wasn't a tower separation, and that, you know, that happens. Where most of the towers in Bethesda right now are set back on their side, we almost always suggest that the other side has to set back as well. And I think that's the condition you're in right here. Albeit those lots are a little bit bigger, so it's a little easier to do. But you know, this is a tough situation, obviously, that you're in because of the size of the lot, but also because of that separation on units that are already there on the other side that did set back in order to allow a separation.
Is the red outline, is that the property line?
Yes.
I was saying, if there were space on the, what is that, the west side here?
The Hulcher Garage.
I would say go right up against the parking garage, and then maybe you could increase the setback, but I guess that's...
So the orientation in the Chase of units, do we have a plan of the Chase building in terms of the orientation of each of those units?
You have a site, go to the site plan. See it from that.
I mean, some units have, that's their only exposure.
Yeah, there. So right. The units are obviously facing north.
Yeah, it's conventional. It's got corner rooms, and it follows the perimeter.
The balconies on their north side.
Yeah. Yeah, there's balconies for the two units that are right back here, and then right balconies on the
side as well. Do we think a notch that fit in with your stacking on the south side to sort of create
that Woodmont
multiple on the south facade?
No notch, just
break down the massing.
Just separate the plane.
Are you talking about on Woodmont facade?
I'm talking about the south side.
Yeah, but where would the notch be on the Woodmont end?
We have a notch
on the south side.
Yeah, but what end of
the building?
In the middle.
I mean, it's that if you have, you know, if you have 120 feet of, and then you, and maybe the difference is 4 inches, and it's enough to read. I'm just try to think of ways to...
It's different, and it's articulated with a different material. And I thought Mr. Hender was suggesting that that light color facade then can start to turn that corner on top. So this top continues.
Well, what I was trying
to... So now it's that whole volume.
What I was trying to do was marry up Paul's suggestion with stepping back the top couple floors to get some tower separation with the alignment of the material. Yeah. But is a way of making up some of the area you would lose by doing that? Or how about eliminating the notch that you have on the west facade and add that area back in?
I wouldn't be able to do that because of fire code.
You have to have the fire.
Yeah, otherwise, you wouldn't have legal windows. Those are full-length windows, whereas right. The other ones are the smaller fire code windows.
They have to have that notch.
Yeah, they're not fire code windows.
So are the windows that are on the party wall, are they at risk?
They're both at risk, and they also have fire sprinklers, and they have knee walls and a bunch of other fun things.
And they're less
but if it's two stories or after, we could do something. If it's the top two floors, that's
right.
A little more palatable in terms of the differentiation.
You're 120
how we deal with
it. 120 feet.
Yeah.
And the chase
it's five floors, but it's arbitrary. It's a number.
But two floors, what does it really mean?
We haven't talked about how much setback.
What do you really want to do?
It wouldn't have to be very
much. Setback.
Well, I don't know. I hadn't heard that. Yeah. We started out with like 25 feet. 20 minutes ago.
You wouldn't have to go back 25 feet.
Well, we're 29 now.
No.
Right?
No. How much additional?
Additional.
Setback?
Yeah, I think that may be a useful conversation to at least hear some feedback on that.
I mean, I don't know what the answer is.
I haven't
heard an answer.
But just one of those things is structurally that wall is the whole outside wall for like HDL is.
So your steel over concrete. The podium is going to be concrete.
Yeah, there'll be podium concrete and 12-story like HDL above.
Easier to do at the top of the building than at the bottom.
It is
right.
It is.
Okay,
this
so
is panelized.
Don't go too deep on us, and we'll figure it out.
But 50 feet will do it.
Well, the thing about it is, I need how to structure that setback all the way down.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's just
been there.
It's not easy.
on let me as it is, 12-story like HDL is kind of
it's pushing it.
It was even before, without a setback, it was pushing it.
I usually said 8 stories was as high.
This is the offset.
So could you get back a bay? Could you get back a window bay?
Get rid of this.
I don't know.
Could you set back?
It's going to change the character of those units.
Structural bay?
Well, you know, the first window on the corner.
Well, you do have the possibility.
You do typically get a balcony on a setback, so keep that in mind. It's going to be on the
and
south
valuable,
side, and someone's going to tell us they don't want it.
That's very valuable.
You got to do it. You have to have
so
it.
So the people on the upper floors of the Chase will have those people looking in on them.
Well,
10th floor. 10th floor.
Yeah.
10th floor.
Are they here?
Yeah, they're here.
Yeah.
It would be,
I thought they were here.
It would be the 11th, it would be the 10th and 11th floor.
It's better.
You don't have to provide access.
Better.
I mean, it would seem to me that if we're in a situation where we have to set back the upper floors, there can be no doubt that there would be balconies on that south facade.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm proposing that is that we take that mid-level. So we do the two-story stagger, and this is where that break is, right here.
Mm-hmm.
And we offset this mass, mm-hmm. and continue that building around.
Do you have a two-story grid on the northern elevation?
No. No, it's the light-colored brick.
Yeah,
but I think you break it up in double-height bays.
It counters to the
so
to
it would
the
be
grid.
It would
yeah.
be similar
it's,
to
it's
that.
It's counter to the grid.
Yeah.
It's quite sophisticated.
It's unfortunately not where you want balconies. In theory, you normally want balconies there because it's the southern facade, but you don't want balconies there just because you're going to chase shadowing for most of the day. I mean, the point is that it's the wrong place for balconies because it'll be shadowed by the...
Upper floors will have light because
yeah,
you've got...
So, yeah.
But
the trade-off is the Chase residents will have a bit more distance between their units and the building.
Right.
Yeah.
Just at the upper two levels, right.
But yeah, just that's a good point. It's only at the top two levels.
There won't be a shadow line because 120 doesn't translate over to 100.
Right.
Yes, I mean, what are we getting there by doing that 2-4 setback?
I think what you're getting is you don't have a 120-foot wall in it.
Right. They're trying to.
You lower the wall.
You're making it 100-foot wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was what I was trying to get to, so that you're getting more. I mean, right now the guidelines, you know, talk about on a downtown mixed-use street up to 70 feet, right, facing the street. So what I was trying to suggest is if that could be carried around, you know, then you're acknowledging the guidelines on that southern end, and that might then translate into helping the tower separation because you get a little more width on those upper floors.
And how many feet are we talking about stepping back? 5-10 feet?
Well, that's what I suggest. You know, it could be that one bay of a window depth that on this side, on the western side.
Which is what?
That
which is probably what?
10-12 feet.
That's pretty. That's a lot.
That's a deep.
That's very deep.
Yeah.
Very
deep. So maybe it's even less than that.
I think it's probably. What?
What would it do to those units on the top?
We get rid of them because they lose their back. They'll be losing their back. I mean, the bedrooms are only 12 feet wide. Mm-hmm. So you'd be losing the bedroom.
Well, you're gonna have.
We could redesign. I understand what you're saying.
We could have penthouse units up there.
I mean, obviously, if there was going to be a setback, there's. You'd want that setback to be 5 feet for 5 feet.
Yeah, I did at this point. You know, we got. When did we get all those letters? Yesterday.
Yeah. Over the last week or so.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they were sent over the last. We got them, I think, yesterday or 2 days ago. Every one of those letters basically talks about the separation between Chase and that building on the new building's south end. And so what I'm trying to suggest is that what can we do to at least address one of the key issues?
Yeah, time and time again, we're faced with people wanting to really challenge the design guidelines. Design guidelines are there for a reason. And, you know, there are many guidelines you really aren't meeting, so this is kind of one small gesture of complying with those guidelines.
Okay. All right. What's...
I have a timing question. Well, actually, after we're done in the substance.
I mean, are there...
Can I ask one question?
Mm-hmm.
Could we split the difference on that top two floors, and could we get a setback here and not on this piece in the back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say so.
Would that be?
Oh, the front. Okay, I see what we're saying.
Yeah.
So break up the stuff.
I work for too many developers. I'm sorry. I'm always trying to.
No, I understand that. Okay.
No, I think that.
But could that
no? Because
I could make a nice enough unit here that I wouldn't lose.
All right. We could. Okay. All right. Let's look at that.
With an offset visually.
Well, I mean, I understand why you're doing it.
Minimally.
That one unit is already a weird unit, whereas
this.
To break up that,
right.
You're breaking it, that's a weird unit already. Whereas the other unit,
that
would kill
it. My concern, that's your concern, I understand that.
But
my concern, urbanistically, is that there is a reference to the guidelines
from
on the mixed
street.
Use street, and it begins
street.
To acknowledge that as it turns around the corner.
I think that makes sense.
The massing of the building looks to be a little bit modulated, which I think also helps.
And if you think about the sun and the fact that the sun is blocking
at certain times of the year,
it makes no sense to have
to
go ahead.
But I think your point is, given the design, given what's actually the street, you're doing it from Woodmont, so the setback is on Woodmont.
Which would make
that
sense.
See it on Woodmont, and then it goes
that's
right.
Correct.
Right.
And at certain times of the year, there the sun is ahead of the axis towards the north, so more sun is deeper into the building at that corner.
That last line is interesting. Cutting that corner off?
This.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was even thinking it could be a curve.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I don't like that corner at all. We,
I never liked that corner.
We're given that corner, right? You know, it's
I'm just saying that's an obvious answer.
It's a tough corner.
It opens up the distance at the property line.
That's where we want to bring that back.
Okay. We heard two different things with respect to the grid. And
only one.
You know, it's like cooking by committee.
Add a pinch of salt.
Which gives me a little bit of pause as we go forward in terms of getting everyone on the panel on the same page.
Never happens.
Okay.
All right.
So we can go back with our experts.
Well, I think
your advice.
I think what was said, if you go to the eastern elevation, I think what was stated is that I think we.
You like that?
Very much like how the white goes around the corner. Maybe it could go further,
or maybe it
could come down.
The gray grid
could either come down or go back a little bit or something. But it's that the massing of the white brick
here
is a little bit more.
Yeah,
you're not going to get a unanimous kind of feeling about it.
I personally don't think the grid is contributing to the design. I think you could get a much more elegant, much more sophisticated building by really kind of working on that white surface and detailing it in the absolute right way.
Yeah.
And it would be extremely elegant building as a consequence.
I agree.
Okay.
So, but you're not going to get unanimous agreement.
Right. Right. I'm not saying anything.
If it's unanimous, it's generally bad.
Yeah.
it's a no.
Okay, so I guess the question is, where do we go from here? We have our hearing March.
So before we get to sort of concluding pieces, are there other, because I think there were a couple of folks from the community who wanted to share a couple of thoughts. Are there thoughts, comments from the panel on the design, additional?
We did say that if you're going to use the grid, make sure that the materials are coincident with the two grids. In other words, ones you said.
You use it, the east and the west is different.
That's right. Okay. So,
and I think if you're really going to step back on the south side, the dimensions of the grid get to be less pure and more confused.
Right.
And so I'm sort of tending to think that an elegant
route. Huh? We're bringing you around.
Yes, we're bringing you around.
Okay. All right.
You were so compelling.
All right. So
you'll have to explain that to me.
I think everything you said, except for I like the grid on the west side. I'm not sure. I understand. We'll figure it out. He's smarter. Yeah, okay. He talks well.
All right, so we had two members.
And he taught us.
Of the public who wanted to speak. We have Ms. Dash and Mr. Diamond. Are you still here? Yes, please keep your comments focused on the design and
brief. Oh, okay. Okay, so my name is Penny Dash. I'm a member of the Committee of Concerned Unit Owners, created and authorized by the Board of Directors of the Chase Condominium. You know why I'm here, and we've submitted our extensive comments by letter, and I know you've talked about a lot of things that are concerned to the Chase. I'm not going to go into all of my comments today. You'd be pleased to hear. I did want to talk about the tower set. Well, first I wanted to ask you, since the building was below 120 feet, I thought it was at 120 feet.
It's just below 120.
Because the drawing said 120 feet. I thought.
It showed 120 feet.
So right now we're at 118 feet, but the maximum height that we're allowed to build is 120 feet.
Okay, so the setback. So I know the developer doesn't want this 45-foot setback, of course. The Chase people want as much of a setback as we can get, and you're talking about articulation and the height. Some setbacks mid-range, but why can't the whole building be just set back? And how is the building, the Edgemore condo, going to maintain the building? The exterior wall, that's the first thing the people exiting the metro are going to see when they come out on Vermont, is that southern wall. And over time, there's going to be degradation to the wall. You're not going to be able to maintain it without trespassing on Chase property or any rights. There needs to be some setback. It may not have to be 45 feet, of course. But it should be something. It should be something where they can maintain the wall. And that's the same thing for the west side as well. People walking on Edgemore, the first thing they're going to see is that west wall. That's all they're going to see. if you know the block, I don't know how familiar the panel is with that block. So that has to be able to be maintained, and the west wall should be back as well. I'm going to skip a couple of things, but one of the most important things about the building that the community is really concerned about, not just Chase residents, is that the building doesn't minimize conflicts between vehicles, pedestrians, and cyclists, that it's supposed to, according to section 7.33.E.6 of the sketch plan criteria. So we've already mentioned previously there's no drop-off space, but what I want people to really consider, and if you don't know the site, I urge you to go see it again, or for the first time, is that it's a really busy street. It's a pedestrian street. It sounds great to put people living across the street from the metro. It's not just the metro. It's a big transit hub with buses, places for bicyclists to park. There's drop-off lanes. It's a big, busy hub, and a lot of traffic and pedestrian traffic. But the 15-foot setback on Woodmont is way too skimpy for pedestrian safety on that street. I'm reminding the panel that this, unlike many other dense developments that come all the way out to the property line, and all the way have not the required setbacks, you're not one block from an elementary school. When we have children from the Chase going to elementary school, everybody in that neighborhood that's close enough walks on the nice days. Children don't always stay with their parents, they run ahead. So you have the garage, it's only 15 feet, so the sidewalk is 8, that gets to 84 inches. There's no visibility coming out to see pedestrians because the building's there. You don't have a landing space for cars to stop before they reach the sidewalk. So cars not 84 inches, they were 183, 190, that's how big a car is. It's half the space necessary, or less, to get a landing space on Woodmont to come out safely. Next to it, you have the Lorinda. The trucks back up, again, pedestrian. This is all pedestrian walkway because the metro is right here. People work in this building. There's another big development coming up before Bethesda Metro. I love that. Well, not very technologically adept. So the 15-foot setback, is that the southeast, northeast perspective? You can see it from the southeast as well. So this is really too skimpy to allow for pedestrian safety. Remember, the bicycle lane now is going to be both ways. They come at you fast. So these drivers, and they're going to be drivers, it's not going to be everybody walking to the metro in the morning. We know from Chase residents, myself, retired, active senior, I'm out in my car during commuter hours getting to my activities. People are going to be out. So they're going to be driving, pedestrian problem. And then with the additional two buildings on Edgemoor, of course, we're going to have many more pedestrians. With the additional office space that's going up at 4 Bethesda Metro over the Purple Line, we have the police station used to be, four people driving into that area and walking in there. So I've already said that it's walk from the elementary school with children walk. The county has seen an increase in pedestrian accidents in 2019 over the previous year. We've already had several fatalities, sadly. And the county has a Vision Zero of pedestrian safety initiative. So I urge the panel to be in contact with them to see what can be done to set back this building on Woodmont so that there is pedestrian safety. The other thing I need to mention is that the northwest perspective, well, this one shows it too. This is the northeast perspective for the northwest. It makes it look,
This
one's fine. Either one. This makes it look like these are in a line. This is the garage, the Chase wall, and the new development. But they're not in a line. This is going to protrude out from this wall. So if you start Edgemoor and Arlington, if you start Edgemoor on Arlington Road, from Arlington Road, walking to the metro, as many pedestrians do, there's a beautiful two-story setback, townhouse community, it's the Chase wall, and then this is going to jut out. And as you walk on the sidewalk, you can't even see the corner because it's going to be obstructed. So I think that's a design flaw aesthetically. And unless you're moving the sidewalk all the way to the curb, you're going to lose all the trees here. I think it's a problem. So there's going to be disharmony and blocking visibility coming east for pedestrians and drivers. And again, I urge the panel to visit the site. And I'll meet you with my tape measure. I would be happy to meet you and show you. And the last thing I want to say, not as a Chase representative, but it was a little bit, I read the developer's narrative, I'm sorry to say, as sort of a veiled threat that if these extraordinary boundaries are not approved, that they can't continue with the development. And I would urge the panel to just consider safety first before trying to make the developers happy. And that's what I have to say. And again, I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do
you have any questions?
No, but can we make the staff person that has received all the letters, can we make sure that they're forwarded? Thank you.
Mr. Diamond?
Hi. So I'm here as wearing a couple of different hats. One is I'm the president of the Chase Condominium. And I want to support my fellow condo owners who have submitted letters. As the board of directors formed a committee, and I want to support the committee's effort to try to communicate our concerns. So I also wear the hat as an individual unit owner at the Chase. Let's take a look at this perspective, this northwest perspective. I understand the game being played, but the Chase condominium, which is to the right of the proposed building, is a building that has balconies. Every single unit, identical large balconies. And what you're seeing there when you look at that is it almost looks like an office building where the windows don't open. And so, lost my perspective. So please understand that completely wrapping around that building, it may be my phone and I can't get to it. So completely wrapping around the Chase are deep balconies. These are balconies large enough for furniture on the balconies, two chairs, a table, a lot of people, and most people who have that western exposure, these exposures use the balconies. And please keep that in mind as you look at this, that this is not building a new building next to a blank wall, because it isn't. And that's kind of an unfair perspective, considering the importance of the two. There was a little discussion today about precedent. And so on the south side of the Chase building is the Edgemore condominium. That's another 12-story condominium, which was built after the Chase. The Chase provides a 30-foot or 29-ish setback to the property line, and then there is another 20 to 25-foot setback provided by the Edgemore. And that's the side of the building that I live on. That 40-foot, 45-foot space between the two buildings is a reasonable amount of air and light and distance between the buildings to make it livable. And it's also precedent for how to build around the Chase. Why should one side of the Chase get the benefit of a 45-foot setback and the other only our own 29-foot setback and basically a zero lot line build for the next building? I'm in no way, not my condo president hat, but personally, I find it just offensive that the community is willing to sacrifice the 40 unit owners who own on the north side of the Chase to allow 77 units of density because, you know, that's good for the community. Well, the people living in the Chase are also the ones who began to provide the density that made downtown Bethesda an interesting place to live. 40 of them shouldn't be sacrificed for the next 77. And we're not saying no development. We're not saying no development, but a more reasonable setback. That's what I would be looking for, separation of the towers in a more reasonable way. It was reasonably done on the south side of our building, and it should be matched on the north side of our building. I think it was discussed here today reasonably, looking for, you know, either terracing or requiring the full setback. But what disturbs me is, you know, trying to buy into this idea of, well, it's not economically viable if we have to do a reasonable setback. And I'm hoping that is not at all a consideration. However this developer decides to do it, it ought to be because it's the right way to develop and not because it's economically viable. And he really needs to build to the, you know, full out to the property line in order to make it work. So I'm hoping that won't be your consideration. I mean, if I understand it right, you're all professionals in this business, so you all get what it means. But I think you've got to also be fair to those people who helped make Bethesda what it is already by buying in and living in the urban area, and not, you know, jam this building too close to them. So that's the principal comments.
Appreciate it. Okay, so we are at sketch plan, so we are not voting on points today. We are voting to approve with the guidance provided. That'll be summarized in the notes that we'll send out to all the panel members, or not approve. So unless any of the panel members have additional things they'd like to discuss, we can move forward with that vote. Okay, so who votes to approve without condition? Approve with condition? No votes to approve with condition? Deny?
So, taking my architect's hat off and being the official Bethesda area representative, I think there's some really good points that have been made. I think the issue of maintaining a facade right on the property line, I think there has some agreements with your adjacent property owners to do that. I think the tower separation is a big deal. And I'm sorry, I think there you have a by right ability to build what you want, but I also think there has to be compliance with the design guidelines, particularly on the south side.
I guess my question too is, to what extent it's not viable to make this project happen, do such amount of setback. It's almost need to have analysis for us to comment on, because right now we can't give you a number of 5, 10, 15.
Let me add on the positive side. I think we've made some real improvements in the design, but mm-hmm. I think there are some real issues out there.
I mean, I know we're running over time, so I don't know how much longer we want to do this, but I would say that was actually pretty persuasive testimony from the community. I would like a rebuttal to hear from you guys on kind of addressing some of those comments. And I do understand the, I don't want to say unfairness, but the fact that this is already the second time you guys have been before us at sketch plan level. So I certainly would want to give you guys clear direction moving forward here. And these are, I'm sure this came up the first time, but I don't remember it being as, that we were kind of dwelling on it as much.
Well, I think, I mean, the discussion that I was trying to introduce is to, you know, what is a reasonable compromise? And, you know, in the building that you proposed, right here, at least as far as the massing is concerned and those issues, I don't think there was any compromise. And so, I think from the testimony that we've heard and from the discussion we had, I think there needs to be something to at least acknowledge that there is an issue here. And if you can't have, you know, I see because of the size of the site, you can't have tower separation everywhere, but I think you gotta have something that addresses the primary concerns.
I mean, the difference in I'm going to focus on the south facade, the western portion of the south facade. But The setback right now is 30 feet. We heard 40 feet. Qualitatively, the difference between 30 and 40 feet when you're back in the western portion where they're not getting light anyway at any time of the year, I think that's a arbitrary number. The site was rezoned CR knowing that it was 8,000 square feet and knowing that that it has its challenges, and the design guidelines actually recognize that small sites have challenges and there needs to be some relaxation. We certainly hear what Paul and others have been saying, that there needs to be some compromise, but I would say that if we're, you know, if there's a hard line position that the building needs to be set back 10 feet off that property line, you've eliminated X percent of that building. It's not that the profit margins go down, it's that you don't have a viable building because there's costs. No one does anything at a loss. So there needs to be
I would think that the Chase folks probably would be very happy if you came in and you built a 5-story stick frame building. I don't think they'd have any problem with that. I don't know. I'm just suggesting that.
With no setback.
However, you know, once you start going up in the tower, I mean, this room right here is 24 feet from one end to the other. And so, you know, right now what you're proposing is a couple feet more than what this room is.
You mean the distance?
The separation between the two towers. Mm-hmm. And I think it's you know, yes, it's the north end, they're not getting any sunlight. I get it. But there is sort of, it's light and air. So there is sort of space that you can feel something. And so what I was trying to suggest is if you can make it look like it's less of a 120-foot tower on that side and have some sort of setback that acknowledges, yeah, there needs to be a little more air, of the light and air, I think it would help.
Yeah, and I kind of agree where Bill was going, and again, this is against my interest. I mean, obviously when the Chase was designed, it was even before the Metro was open. So it was designed at a different era. It was back in the 80s. Obviously, the plans have changed quite a bit, and you've gone from a very suburban area to a now urbanized area. So I mean, the rules have changed since the Chase was contemplated.
Yeah.
So obviously, when the last guidelines came out, they came out with zero lot lines. So I mean, what we as a group created. We're in an urbanized area, we're across the street from the Metro. 4-story stick does not make sense anymore. Mm-hmm. We want something taller, more urbanized on there, and that's why we had got it. Now, but I think going back to what you were saying, breaking up the face and giving up the streetscape, I mean, I think that makes sense. I mean, again, I have my own issues and I have to go back to Structura to see what can and can't be done. But I think, you know, talking about breaking up the face on that Woodmont side, doing a setback that is at least, you know, 5 feet on those upper two levels. If it's not 5 feet, it doesn't even help me. Mm-hmm. So I mean, if I'm going to step back 2 feet, I might as well step back 5 feet. In order to have something, I think that will break up that facade. Now, before we were here, we were trying to break up that facade with a green wall, mm-hmm. And we were going to do that. We got pushed back by people in this room, other people on staff, and even the people behind us, not because they didn't like the green wall, they were worried about, we like to look at a green wall, but we don't want to look at a dead green wall.
Right.
And so I mean, I understand where they were coming from. It was not wrong. I mean, mm-hmm. To break up that facade on the upper two levels on that one Woodmont side, I mean, that does make sense. We were trying to also look at other ways to break up that 120-foot wall structure. And we're trying to do whatever we can in order to accomplish that. But I mean, me coming from the district, 29 feet is a huge amount of distance.
Yeah,
I was going to comment
on that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, coming from the district, we never get more than 20. 20 is the max, not the minimum.
Not just the district. Urbanizing the areas. District. I have courtyards on hundreds of buildings that are 20 feet wide.
Yeah, exactly.
That conform to the zoning code. So, you know, Pat's point about it being somewhat arbitrary, I think it is. It's a number that was made by a person or a committee like this committee. And it doesn't really mean that that number, if you don't reach it, it's going to be dreadful. It's just
yeah, but
29
so
feet. We have 29 feet.
That's nine more that's than a, I usually
that's
work with.
That's
more than I usually
that's
work
the largest courtyards in buildings like the Chase that I you know that I've done in urban locations. It's not meager. Mm-hmm. It's not meager. And what we do is we enlarge it as it goes up. So if there is a setback, then we are accomplishing that. If we say 30 feet's the magic number, which I would believe is the magic number for any kind of face-to-face building, 30 feet, my Lord, we're 1 foot short of that.
Well, one suggestion I have, because we have a March sketch plan hearing that we want to keep, does this committee meet in February?
Yeah.
Can we come, we hear you, we know that we need to take another look at this south facade, can we come back for in February and still hold that March date? Or alternatively, can we go forward to the sketch plan hearing? Well, I prefer
okay, we need to come back.
Yeah,
yeah. We need you guys to come. We need you guys before we go to sketch. When is
can we come back with limited discussion?
We're just on the south facade.
Is what I'd like to see, if we could.
I mean, are we, is it sound like we're agreeing on everything but for the south facade?
Oh, we need to.
Well, it depends if we're going to have a grid or not.
Okay.
That's the only element I can think of.
Yeah, and I think that's more of a site plan
site
discussion.
Anyway.
Yeah. But I think the massing is a sketch plan discussion, and I think that is
that's important. Yeah.
Right.
It should be all based on massing. Mm-hmm.
And massing specifically on the south side.
Right.
Massing. Very good.
Okay. Yeah. So there is February 26th is when the DAP meets again. And the third, this same time slot is open, so reach out to Emily today.
When do we need to submit the new drawings?
It's what, 2 weeks before?
Okay.
So the 12th.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So we'll see you back on the 12th.